Kimberly here. This is Macabish, Cults, Classics, and Horrors. We're talking films, series, books, and life. We're starting right now.
Diane's performance is just... Why was I not told?
I'm thinking the same. Like, why was I not aware of this movie until now?
Right.
And the fact that it's like 15 years old.
Right. And talk about a scream queen. Are you kidding? Like, I bought it. I bought the torture. Like, she never gave it up. That was amazing.
No, she didn't.
And it went like, on.
I mean, she
on.
Was just as relentless all the way through it.
It's like if Michael Myers could talk. And caught Lori early, but Lori was still a badass. Those kind of performances is why I know I could never be an actor. Because I can't keep up that same energy acting like I'm suffering and I'm being injured for like, what, 7 solid minutes?
At least.
And the look on her face, all of it. I can't do that.
7 solid minutes. I promise you that means she was doing that for fucking 6 hours straight.
Oh, I'm sure. So I was like, holy crap. You know what? I believe it. I believe right now she is being tortured by this maniac.
Mm-hmm. Well, the second one is close to 2 hours long. Hour
still
and 52
like a
minutes.
Preview, though.
Yeah.
Like, can I get a clip?
I'm trying to. There's not even on IMDb, like, there's no clips.
I know.
There's a teaser trailer on YouTube.
The cast is all like MMA people. What the fuck?
I know, right?
Well, at least you know everybody.
Somebody gets their ass beat down in the movie.
Man, she was also in Iowa, which another really, really good performance. That's also on Tubi.
Okay, I'll have to watch that one this evening.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Oh, crap, she's here. Stop talking about her. How rude. Hello.
I'm okay with it. What's up, everybody?
Hi. We were just we've been binging all the movies you've been in that we could find on streaming.
Oh,
Gushing.
Awesome.
The Orphan Killer. We were not informed.
Yep.
How incredible that movie was gonna be.
Yeah, I just finished it and just spent a ton of money on buying a copy.
Thank you, first of all, for having me. I'm so grateful and honored to be here. You guys are amazing. So thank you for having me. So where it all began, I grew up in Union, New Jersey, and my family still lives there. My parents have lived in the same house. They've been together 65 years. My parents are older. They had me when they were older. There's 6 of us. So big family, 5 girls, 1 boy. And they were all very like into sports and stuff. And I'm the last, and I came out just kind of like singing and dancing, and they were like, okay, we'll deal with you. And I really started like performing when I was like 8 years old, and I was Little Miss Union. And, from there, I just did a lot of theater. And growing up in New Jersey, you're really afforded the opportunity to go into New York City and do a lot of theater. So that's really where I started, you know, doing, really getting the bug, I guess, for doing this. I did a lot of regional theater. I mean, that was the thing, like you could see me in a show every single week, and I was always performing from the time I was in middle school. So I did a lot of theater. And my senior year of high school, I went to conservatory at the Paper Mill Playhouse every summer, and we got to study with, you know, people who came in from New York City to teach us acting, singing, and dancing. And that was such a beautiful, amazing experience throughout my high school years. And in my senior year of high school, they have something that they still run to this day called the Rising Star Awards. And it's sort of like the Tonys for high school musicals in the entire state of New Jersey. So that year I did Once Upon a Mattress, and I played Princess Winifred. And I happened to be nominated against a woman who I went to conservatory with named Anne Hathaway. So her Anne and I went to conservatory together for years and years and years, and knew each other very well. And that same year, I was in my senior year, she was in her junior year. We played the same role. We were both Princess Winifred and Once Upon a Mattress, but she was at Milburn High School, I was at Union High School, and we were nominated for Best Actress, and I won. And take I'll never let her live it down. So obviously, yes, kudos to Anne. She's gone on to do tremendous things, including winning an Oscar. So incredible. But that really sort of set me off on like, oh, I can do this. I was 18 years old and I was like, oh, I think I can like actually like do this and maybe like even make a career out of it. And that sort of set me on my trajectory. So I stayed in New York City for about another 2 to 3 years, just doing a lot of off-Broadway. I did a stint on like SVU, Law and Order, because that's what you do when you grow up on the East Coast. There's not a lot at that time of television that people were doing. And then at 21, I decided I wanted to make my way west and came to Los Angeles, and I have never left. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. So, basically when I first got here, I danced my whole entire, childhood. I was, you know, dancing and singing and acting. So when I first got to LA, my first job I ever got, I was 2 weeks here. I was literally living at a Days Inn in Studio City. And it was the year that Halle Berry won Best Actress, because I had like got here then. And I remember it so vividly because it was historic. And I just remember thinking like, holy shit, I'm in Hollywood. This is so awesome. And my first job ever, 2 weeks later, I was at a dance class. I was taking dance lessons because I was like, well, I'm just going to, you know, continue my craft while I'm here. And I met Robin Anton, who created the Pussycat Dolls. And she said to me, you know, you're such an amazing dancer. Where are you from? I haven't seen you around here. I'm like, I'm new here. And she's like, I want you to be in this show called the Pussycat Dolls. And I was like, okay, sounds cool. So we did that at the Roxy in Hollywood for, I don't know, it was like 6 weeks or something. We did this show and it was the Pussycat Dolls live at the Roxy. And this was prior to them being an actual girl group. She had always wanted them to be a girl group, but this is sort of like, that was their beginning. So it was like 20 of us girls who like danced in these like sexy costumes, and we had sailor boys, and it was just awesome. And literally everyone in Hollywood showed up to it. And this was like my first job ever in Hollywood. So I was like, well, I guess I'm off to the races. and that also kind of just gave me the confidence of like, okay, you're doing something right. Keep going. And then I was auditioning for independent film and was doing a bunch of that. And then really the first kind of thing that got me into film, period, was the film Iowa. And I had met my partner at the time, and we got together and made Iowa. We created a documentary called Dying for Meth that was in conjunction with the film. And it was really like pre Breaking Bad, like that wasn't out yet. It was sort of around the time of like the movie Spun with Brittany Murphy, if you guys remember that film. Yep. It was very like pre all of like people knowing about methamphetamine. And we just wanted to create this like love story around methamphetamine. His family was from there and he wrote the script. And I was like, we have to make this movie. I was 24 years old at the time. I had never produced, I had never acted in a film before. And I was just like, let's jump, let's go. And we did it. And that film was an official selection of Tribeca Film Festival. And that was like, whoa, holy moly, we got here. And and then really just continued to make movies from that point forward. The next one was The Orphan Killer. And then after that came The Orphan Killer 2. And then we were not together anymore. And I sort of had to come into myself and figure out like, well, what am I going to do? And, you know, now we don't have this production company anymore together. So got my life together. 2018 created Wally Bird Productions. And we have made 17 projects since then. Documentaries, music videos, feature films, you know, TV pilots. We just been going. So here we are.
That is amazing. Wow. you've been sprinting since high school.
Yeah.
I really have. And when I think about it and I actually say it now in like in order of how it happened, it was so crazy because I got afforded so many wonderful opportunities. I just kept going and doing it and meeting so many amazing people and just kind of, you know, just kept going all along the way. And now that I think about it, I'm like, wow, like I did all those things. And that was really cool.
How did you come up with the idea for your Easter Bunny horror?
Yeah, so the Easter Bloody Easter began actually as, it came from the idea from a play. And it actually came from an acting class,
okay.
which I hope inspires people, actually, because I think a lot of people come to Hollywood and they're taking acting classes and you kind of never know, and people don't see the work that goes into that. Mm-hmm. And it all began with a scene. Myself and Kelly Grant, who co-stars with me in the film, we were in an acting class together in Beverly Hills, and we did a scene from a play called Laundry and Bourbon. And that scene did really well in the class. Like, people gave us a standing ovation. They loved it so much. And the teacher said, why don't you guys like do more scenes from it? So we were like, okay, cool. And it is a one act play with three women in it in the first act. And the second act is called Lone Star, and it has three men. And okay. They sort of like intertwine stories. And it's amazing. It's by James McClure, and really, really cool play. It takes place in Texas. And from that, we really kind of honed getting to all know each other and work together, because myself, Allison Lobel, and Miles Cooper, who are in the film, were all in those plays together. So we opened in Beverly Hills, and we did a stint of the play there. And then we took it up to San Francisco and did it there. And we were going to do it in New York. We were going to take it to Texas. And then the pandemic hit. Okay. And we were like, well, we can't do live theater. You know, what are we going to do? So obviously I had been producing for so many years, and you know, my main focus was really doing film. And I was like, well, we've always wanted to do a movie together, so let's make a film. I was like, you know, obviously we have to, you know, maybe take some of the stuff that we have from our characters. You know, we could put it in Texas. We like that. You know, we do well with that kind of thing. So we kind of just started to spitball about like what it could be. And Allison took that ball and went running with it. And she called me, I don't know, I want to say maybe like 2 months later, and was like, okay, I wrote the script, and it takes place at Easter, and there's a giant jackalope. And I was just like, okay, that sounds great. Like, let's do it. So Kelly, Allison, and I went over to Allison's, and this was during the pandemic. I remember it was like summertime of 2020. And we read it outside, you know, outside at the time. We were all being cautious, still wearing masks and like being outside and doing that. And we got our computers open, read through it. And I said, Allison, this is so hilarious, and we have to make it. And she said, well, if we make this, and she said, I know you will, because everything you say you want to make, you're going to do. And she said, but I want you to direct it. And I had never directed, you know, I had directed music videos and stuff like that before, but I had never taken on a feature. And I was like, really? And she's like, yeah, there's absolutely nobody else that can do this. You have to. And she's like, this is, you know, Jeannie's film. You are Jeannie. Like, you have to do this. And I was just like, okay, let's do this. And I thank her so much for that, because it really gave me the confidence to just feel like I could do it, that I could go, and that she trusted me to take the vision that she had written and go with it. So that's really how it came to be.
That's amazing. So that was your directorial debut.
This is the Easter Bloody Easter is my directorial debut. Yep. I directed,
that's so fun.
Starred, wow. And produced. Yeah. It was crazy just switching between all those hats. And yeah, it was really hard. It was really, really hard. I think that, I don't know if I'm just glutton for punishment, or I'm like a masochist, or what is wrong with me, but I also love it. I really do. I think it's just my personality. I really like, I love working hard. I love putting teams of people together, and I love like watching people find themselves and like shine. I really do. It's like, it's something that excites me so much to watch people, like all the actors that we had on set, just like really take their characters and find themselves through it. It's freed me as an artist, and it's saved my life literally so many times. So I'm grateful for the craft of it and doing it. So
nice.
Amazing.
Those amazing performances out of everybody involved. Like, that's why I love the like independent horror movies like that. And I've said before, that's where you really find your quality acting, because if you can take an idea as far-fetched as some of these independent horror movies and find actors who can play it believably, right. Like that is such a totally. Huge talent compared to, you know, the drama is one thing, but to actually believe that, you know, an army of stuffed bunnies are after you.
That's right. Commitment. That's commitment. Right.
Exactly.
And when we saw that first one, we knew. Because at first we were like, I don't know, man. And then that little guy creeped out and those little eyes. Yep. I was like, oh, this is going to be hilarious.
You were so committed to just like you speared that little sucker. You were so committed to killing that stuffed bunny. It was amazing.
And then the jackalope reveal. What? I was like, no way. Yeah,
I'm so happy to hear that, because I feel like it's like that's sort of like the Scooby-Doo moment of like, yeah. Jinkies, you know, like it's this person. And I love that you had that, because actually on set when we were making it, it's really funny because, you know, when you're doing it, most of the time the crew doesn't actually get the script. It's mainly obviously the actors and like, you know, of course, like the heads of each department. So the crew didn't know about, you know, that reveal. And I won't do any spoiler alerts on here for anybody who hasn't seen it yet, you know, for your audience, but like that reveal, they didn't know who it was. And they were like, they all had bets of like that one. So we shot that. We actually shot that closer to like the last day of shooting. It was like day 16 of the 17 days that we shot. And people were like, you know, paying each other. They were like, damn it, you were right. Or no, I didn't win. And that I just, I love that. So I hope that audiences love that too, in that moment of just like the mystery element of like, whodunit.
I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. It was so beautiful. And the fact that your creature had a sense of humor.
And there were so many reveals. There were so many surprises. You have to figure, people like us, we are fans. We have seen thousands upon thousands. It is hard to trip us up. And yet, you did it at least three good times.
Yeah.
Before, because the last, that last, I'm like, she got me again.
Yep.
This is great.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. That's so cool. I mean, I think, you know, the movie really knows what it is. And I think the self-awareness is what makes it so much fun. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it does. It knows what it is. And we were like, I was all about doing practical effects. I come from that world, obviously, as you've seen with The Orphan Killer, we did all practical effects on that. So, you know, I was like, no, we're doing all in camera. I don't want to do any of this in post. Like, this is what the fans want. They know it. They're going to love it. Like, that's the fun part about it, is doing it in camera. So knowing, you know, the film knowing and having that self-awareness, I think, is what audiences will love so much about it, is like, it really knows what it is. And those are the best kind of films that I love anyway. So,
and that's
totally
like right from the get-go, we were sold.
Yeah, I love that. And you go away for an hour and a half and it's like, you want to take people on this ride. And like, I'm telling people, like, it's just a hell of a good time. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to go and have a good time? Like, this is the movie to go and see to have a good time.
Right. And next Easter, I expect to be able to watch part two. So get to work.
Heck yeah. we've already written it. So we're on our way. And this one is called Easter Bloodier Easter.
Easter Bloodier Easter.
Perfect.
Excellent. There's a lot of music in this movie. Are we considering this a musical? Or did it just end up as a musical?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, we do. We have so, so much music. And that kind of happened. It wasn't originally kind of going into it when we had the script. And we definitely had the things like the church lady singing. That was always in there. Jeannie, you know, obviously is musically inclined and she sings and all that stuff. That was already in there. But having Mark Vogel come on board as composer, he and I work incredibly well together. I know what I want, and he is amazing at executing it. So that combination together is just like a dream come true to work with. So I think you know, we just, as we kind of went along, it was just like, can we try this? And let's put music here. And this needs it here. And to me, I'm a very musical person. I think coming from a musical theater background and, you know, doing that, like I'm a musical theater nerd. So for me, it was like, it just made sense, especially as my directorial debut, to have so much music in the film. And I think that it is a character in the film and it really gives so much more to it. I think, you know, music obviously is a huge component to film. So to be able to have that and have all these different cool songs and the jackalope theme that he created, and then the bunnies had their own little thing. So all of that was so, so fun to do. I mean, we literally, Mark recorded a bunny and bunny like chomping and eating carrots, and then twisted it and played it backward to create that crazy like ding, 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 ding.
Oh,
like all that stuff.
Very
yeah.
Cool.
So it was cool. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm totally cool with it being like horror, comedy, musical. I mean, that's why I'm telling people it's very much like a Rocky Horror Picture Show, where like people can dress up and you can like get to know the songs and you can sing. I want people doing the bunny hop, like, you know, all that stuff. Like, you know, it's for you and your friends and your family, and like everybody can enjoy it. And I wanted something like that for the Easter holiday that could bring people together. And there really isn't anything like that, that, you know, people can just laugh their asses off and also maybe sing and scream at the same time. So
true. True. You're right.
Oh, it's definitely a watch it with a group movie.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I was asking them if you were a singer. Mm. None of us knew, of course, but then I'm watching you in Orphan Killer. I was like, I didn't know she was a scream queen. I was like, oh, she a singer. She a singer. Because only the singers who are scream queens scream well. Mm-hmm. You don't scream for 7 solid minutes and not be a singer. No way. No way. I don't believe it.
It's so true. It's so true. I mean, again, I think it lends itself to, you know, my childhood and wanting, you know, and being in musical theater. And really, my dream was to be on Broadway. I mean, that was like what I considered to be the, you know, epitome of everything. And then I found film and I was like, well, I still love Broadway and I've never been on Broadway. And I definitely want to do that. It would be an incredible experience. But I think I just sort of found my way within film to be able to express that this way. And really this film allows me to do that and, you know, share that I haven't really shared before. And a lot of people don't know that, especially if you've seen The Orphan Killer and you know me from that. People are like, wait, what? You sing and you dance and like, you're like a musical theater nerd. What? So it's fun to have people, you know, find that out about me. And it's kind of cool and exciting.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so your soundtrack is going to have all those songs from that movie. Okay.
Yeah, all the songs are on it. And all those are all singles also, too, that are all have been released. But they're all on a soundtrack. And there's a couple of other songs that we added to it. We did like a new version of the Easter Egg Hunt, which is the song that the church ladies sing that is hilarious. Mm-hmm. And then we have an acoustic version also of the song Monster, which is sung by Ali Bax, too. She's an incredible singer. And that's sort of like Genie's theme through the film. So we have an acoustic version of that on there. So there's a couple of additional songs that aren't in the film that are also on the vinyl release. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now you're going to make me buy a record player.
Yes.
Bad enough. I'm spending a fortune on your movies. Now I have to buy a record player.
Where did you film this in Texas?
So we filmed in LA, actually.
Oh, in LA? Okay.
Yeah, everything was filmed sort of in the Sun Valley area. We were on a private ranch. We did you know, most of it there. We did a couple of different things in Burbank, like the church was, the little white chapel was in Burbank. Uh-huh. But yeah, the main sort of town of Wahlberg takes place in Sun Valley, California.
I really did appreciate all the insane small town characters because... Mm-hmm. It's hard to swing it if you're going to just do, well, it's a small town.
Thank you. I love the zany characters. And, you know, I think the other thing is that, like, it was really important to create, like, the world that we live in. And mm-hmm. that's that's obviously, of course, part of my mission with Wally Bird is like getting more females in leadership position, getting more people of color in leadership position, giving people opportunities in front and behind the camera. And our cast is very diverse, and I wanted people to see themselves in these people, even though they are zany and crazy. And I wanted them to be like, oh my God, I know that person, or, you know, I want to dress up as that person, or whatever it is, just seeing themselves, you know, is important. And I wanted to make that prevalent in the film as well. So we love the zany characters. And I think, you know, the zanier the better, because it allows all the like the dramatic stuff and all that stuff to really like hit you, because you're like, there's so much craziness, and then there's like all this real stuff going on too.
Right.
And it really is like grown up. Like these are, people are dealing with like real stuff in the midst of, you know, demon bunnies coming after them. So.
Right. That's perfect.
It was really fun. It was really fun to make. I mean, I can't say enough about the cast and crew. They're all really talented people, and everybody, you know, came together. We had a cast of almost 65 people, you know, of the town of Wahlberg kind of making it. Yeah. So it was a lot of people. And then we had almost, I would say like almost a crew, like 35. So it was almost like 100 people on set almost every single day. Yeah, just like giving their all. And we shot it in August of 2021, and it was hot as hell in the valley. And, you know, everyone just dressed up in their Easter best, you know, being scared by bunnies and getting blood thrown on them and stuff. Everyone was really a trooper.
Amazing.
It was clear everybody had a great time doing it. Like, that was so obvious throughout the entire movie.
Oh, I'm happy to hear that. I really am. I love that you guys love it. Like, it really means a lot, because I know you guys certainly know your horror. So it means a lot to me. It really does.
Also, now that you mention it being such a diverse cast, you're right. I don't think I've seen a movie like that.
No.
With any diversity. I don't believe I ever have. And that's pretty sad that I'm just now, like, I recognize the diverse cast, but usually I recognize it more when there's no diversity. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know. And that has to change. And I hope that more and more people will do that. And I think it was so great because, you know, the character of Annie Sue, she is half Japanese. And she said to me, I don't ever get to do roles like this. I never get called out for this kind of stuff. I never get to do this. And mm-hmm. I'm just so grateful that I can do this, because I want to scream my head off and I want to die on camera and I want to do these things. I just don't get the opportunity to. Right. And, you know, that's something that has to change. And that is all of my mission is about doing that. And we've been able to do that on every production we've ever done at Wally Bird Productions, both in front and behind the camera. And in particular with this film, it was also very important to me. At one point I wanted an all female crew, and we got almost there. We had a 95% all female crew, and we were awarded the Reframe stamp from Women in Film, which gives you awards for gender parity and inclusivity. So it just means a lot for getting recognized, because it's important to me, and I want to keep doing it, and we have to keep doing it, because that's how we're going to keep moving the needle forward.
Sure. You're only the fifth woman we've had here, which is pathetic, but the one of the women, Christine Chin, she also is very like that. Her crew is almost always women all the time. Yeah. So yeah. The women are really trying to turn this around, and that's awesome.
Heck yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the crazy thing is that it's like so much easier just to hire like the next dude, because there's so many. Right. And I'm like, no, like we have to, like, I'm like, no, we have to get, I want a female first AC. I want, like, we have to find them. They're out there, because once you do, then it gives them an opportunity to continue getting those jobs and continue putting themselves out there, and also having the self-confidence to say, I can do this and I can see myself, and allowing the next generation to say, oh, I can see myself there. And right. that's what it's about, is not just what we're doing here and now, it's what we're leaving behind and who is coming after us. So everyone who has come before us, thank you for doing that, because we're stepping into your shoes and you should continue to pay it forward and do that. And I'm all about it. So we're going to keep doing it at Wally Bird over and over again. And I hope that, you know, there are a lot of female filmmakers out there who can see themselves because of the films that we make.
Sure. Absolutely. Let me see. My Home Unknown.
Yeah.
I didn't see that one. Where is that? Is it playing?
So My Home Unknown is not out right now. My Home Unknown is a film that I produced. I also have a role in it. It's by director, writer, and star Yaz Canley. Mm-hmm. It was Wally Bird's first feature film that we produced. And it is about a woman who is unhoused and she has a mental illness. And it is right now currently one of the only films that really speaks on that. She also happens to be a person of color as well. And, you know, the female experience of being unhoused is different than the male experience. And we wanted to shed light on that. And we premiered that film at Dances with Films this past summer. We've gotten into a couple of different film festivals. We're at the Pasadena Film Festival in April, which is very exciting as an official selection. We worked with the Downtown Women's Center. We did a screening there for the women who are there. And the feedback was so incredible. They were like, this is my experience. This was my experience on the street. So just telling a really honest story of that was really important to us. And we worked with foundations that work with, you know, unhoused people and also mental illness foundations, just to make sure we're telling the right story and that we're getting it right. We just had a great screening at USC with the Junior League of Los Angeles, who put on a screening. So we're trying to find distribution for that film. We've been doing sort of these nonprofit screenings, which is great because we're getting the word out, but it's a very, it's a dramatic film, and it tells the real story of it's a narrative feature. So it's not a documentary, but we were filming it like a documentary. There was only five of us that actually made it. It was a 5-person crew.
Oh, wow.
We were on the streets of Los Angeles, because for me, like as a producer, I could not tell a story about an unhoused woman with a crew of 50 with like the crafty truck behind us. I was just like, that's not the story we're telling. We're telling a story about a woman who is unhoused and on the street. So we also have to sort of be in that experience and immerse ourselves in that. So we did. We spent, you know, 2 months every single weekend in 2021, and we were on the streets of Los Angeles just filming this. And I have a lot of hope for this movie. I think that once people see it and they know about it, they're floored by it. They're just like, oh my God, it's so powerful. And Yaz Canley is an incredible actress, and she plays the role of Mina so, so well. And it really, I think, changes your mind, you know, especially in Los Angeles. We walk around and we see people unhoused all the time, and we're so desensitized to it. We're just like, oh yeah, they're just like there on the street, and it's you don't know what to do, you know, what do I do? And it's just these kinds of conversations that we want to have people to have. And that's the kind of conversations people leave having after we have screenings. And they're like, okay, what can I do? And how can I, you know, make a difference? So we're working with these organizations so that they can tell us, because they know they're the experts. What can we do? Like, what can we do as people who are not unhoused? How can we help? You know, do we buy them food? Do we give them money? Like, what do we do?
Right.
So thank you for bringing that up, because it's a very near and dear film, and we are looking for distribution. We have to have the right partners to put it out, because it's a really specific film and it has to have a specific audience. Okay. And it's very independent.
Well, it caught my attention because I was homeless for 2 years in Austin.
Wow.
So I was like, I'm going to need to see that.
Yeah, please come to the Pasadena Film Festival. I I would love that if you can. Are you in LA?
I did no introduction because we're not professional here, apparently. My name is Kimberly Walker. I live in Texas.
We're as amateur as it gets.
And with me are my co-hosts, Carlos Ibarra, who is in Canada, and Christopher Thompson, who's also in Canada. Wow.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
When I do have an opportunity, or, you know, obviously I'm happy to share the film with you guys so you can, you know, watch a screener just so that you guys can, you know, shout us out, whatever. Like, I'm happy to. I think you know, you'll see it's obviously completely different, certainly, than Easter Bloody Easter. But it's very impactful, and it's a very necessary story. And I think we can all sort of learn from it, because I think wherever you are in this world and in whatever country, like, there are people who are unhoused, and, mm-hmm. and how do we figure it out? How do we figure it out from a human way? Because they're daughters, their sons, their moms, their dads, they're artists, they're all these things. And, right. You know, I think any of us are two steps away from that.
Oh, absolutely.
So how do we make a difference, and we change this? So that's really what it's about, and raising awareness about it. We would love to talk to anybody who would really be willing to talk to us about it. I mean, we want to get as many eyeballs on it as possible, because it's an important film. Sure. And you know, it has to be the right distribution partner, because, you know, it's not your big popcorn movie. It's like, it's a cause. And,
right.
You know, and there are movies that come out about that, you know, there mm-hmm. are movies that have done that and have done well. And it's been years in the making. And there was one recently, I think it was about trafficking. Jim Caviezel was in it.
Sound of Freedom.
Yes. Sound of Freedom, yeah.
Thank you. So I know that, like, that had like a journey, and that was like a cause kind of film. So you find your, you know, you just have to find the right distributor to put it out and be your sort of cheerleader and partner.
Sure. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Thank you guys so much for supporting and really loving Easter Bloody Easter. It means a lot to me, because I really poured my heart and soul into it. And I made it for the fans, because my experience making The Orphan Killer was awesome. I loved making that. And I just knew that, you know, I'm like really like a comedian at heart. I really am. And like, I wanted to make something that was fun and that fans would enjoy. And meeting horror fans when I made Orphan Killer and meeting them at conventions and things like that is so much fun, because horror fans are the best, like, in the whole wide world.
Absolutely.
And they like come hard for you, you know, and they'll like, they'll fight for you. And that means so much. And I love meeting horror fans. And like, I was just like, I'm making this movie because I know this is the kind of fun shit they want to see. And like, they're going to laugh their asses off at this. And I really can't wait to go to conventions and stuff, because I want to, you know, after people see the film, I want to meet them and I want to hear, you know, how they love it and how it makes them laugh, scream, sing, dance, whatever. And I appreciate you all so much for just loving it and having me on and supporting me and in my journey. And the film means a whole lot.
Well, thank you, because we need more of you, a lot more. Yeah,
definitely.
We need women, more women filmmakers, more filmmakers who care and make movies for the fans. That's all we ask.
Yes. Yeah. It's not that hard, John. It's not that hard.
Yeah, take the chance. Give us what we want, and we'll pay it back 100-fold.
Exactly.
No, but because you guys are such aficionados, it means a lot, because like you said, you see a ton of movies. So the fact that you loved it and that there were surprises and things like that for you is so awesome. So I appreciate you singing my praises. I really do. The movie comes out on March 26th. So
please
check it out. It's on iTunes, Apple, YouTube Movies, Amazon Prime, Google Play. It'll be physical copies. So please, please, please support, because then that allows us as independent film to then go on to like a bigger streamer, like a Hulu or a Tubi or things like that. So if there's like all of that push for it, then we're able to get to that sort of next step in the realm of distribution. So that's a whole beast. And we appreciate the support.
your physical right now will be available through like Amazon and the regular.
Yep, exactly. Yes, we will have physical copies. It's coming. It's going to be on Blu-ray and DVD. All that releases on March 26th, as well as where it's going to release on Apple, iTunes, YouTube, Google Play, Amazon Prime. Yeah. So
just in time.
Yep. Absolutely want everybody to get physical copies for sure. At some point, we'll do something. I want to do like an Easter basket, like collectible with like the movie, like the Blu-ray version and like some other swag. Everybody, please like follow me on social media. I'm Diane Foster Official on Instagram. You can check out, and also on Facebook, you can check out Wally Bird Productions, wallybirdproductions.com. You can go to at Wally Bird Productions on Instagram. And in those links, all that stuff will be out. You know, it'll always be there. We'll be promoting it. So if you want to check it out and be able to buy it or, rent it, whatever you want to do, you'll be able to. So.
And we'll put your links all in the description and everything. So cool. We'll make it easy for people to find you.
Awesome. Right. I appreciate you guys so much. Thank you. And I hope to meet you all sometime in person somewhere in the world. I appreciate you. Happy Easter.
Happy Easter.
This is the number one place for macabre cults, classics, and horrors. For synopsis, reviews, and news, go to macabre.com. Thank you for listening. Signing out. Until the next one.